blackbird singing in the dead of night. Take these broken wings and learn to fly all your life. You were only waiting for this moment to arise. Blackbird singing in the dead of night. Take these sunken eyes and learn to see all your life. You were only waiting for this moment to be free. Blackbird fly, blackbird fly, dark black night. Blackbird fly, blackbird fly, dark black night.
Welcome to Poets Cafe. I'm host Lois P. Jones, and we're here for a special tribute show this evening to honor Kelly Thomas, a young homeless man brutally tased and beaten to death by six officers of the Fullerton Police Department in 2011. There's probably not a listener in our audience who has not heard of Kelly Thomas and the savage murder captured on video. As a stunned country witnessed a helpless man call out again and again for his father in his last conscious minutes. Two of these men, Manuel Ramos and Jay Cicinelli, were initially charged and then acquitted of manslaughter. We waited for justice and are still waiting. And there's no person who has done more to bring attention to this tragic death and the need for reform than Kelly Thomas's father, Ron Thomas, who joins us tonight to acknowledge not only the wrongful death of a beloved son, but to celebrate the spirit that Kelly Thomas was. We're also joined by poet, artist, and homeless activist Lee White and poet Steve Ramirez. Welcome, everyone. Thank you for coming.
Well, thank you very much. It's an honor to be here.
Thanks, Ron. The song that we opened with, Blackbird by the Beatles, seemed like such an appropriate beginning to the show. I don't know if you know the trivia behind the piece. Maybe you do or you don't, but apparently McCartney used to go to poetry readings and even had a poetry book called Blackbird Singing. And, you know, when people asked him why he wrote Blackbird, that line, you were only waiting for this moment to arise, came from the African-American struggle in 68. And so it's really a song about freedom and rising from oppression on many levels. And I just wondered, was that a particular favorite of Kelly's? And why did you choose that piece?
I chose it. It's one of the songs that Kelly and I really enjoyed. He's a huge Beatle fan, always okay. A huge Beatle fan. That and, of course, Creedence Clearwater Revival and mm-hmm. some others, but I chose it. It's just beautiful.
It is.
Like you said, it's just beautiful.
Yeah.
It deals really with human rights, civil rights for all of us,
mm-hmm.
and I think it is really important to include something so beautiful and so relevant in what we're doing here today.
Right. And the spirit's ascension, too.
Absolutely.
You know, which is why I made that connection as well. What was Kelly like as a boy?
Kelly was just a beautiful little redheaded boy.
Mm.
You know, I guess he was a son that, you know, any father would be proud of. And so before the other two kids were born, his brother and sister, I mm-hmm. would take Kelly and do special things with him, as him and I. And I'd take him out fishing. So we could barely walk. we just had so much fun together. And growing up in the early adolescent years, he was such a joy. And then the other two came along, and he would help them, mentor them as a bigger brother, even though he's still a child. Through the elementary school days, the middle school days, he got good grades. Mm-hmm. He wasn't on the dean's list, but he wasn't failing, so he was perfect in my eyes.
All right.
As far as that went.
That's nice you didn't put a lot of pressure on him.
Not at all. Not the pressure, but I wanted him to do good. I wanted all three to succeed in life. And, you know, so he's very good that way. But he grew up having a lot of friends, extremely likable, smiling, laughing, those types of things. He's a very appreciative little boy. Mm-hmm. And till the day he died, he's very appreciative, actually.
Mm. What kind of interest did he have? I heard he was an avid reader, liked books.
He did. He liked to read a lot. Mm-hmm. And besides the readings, I mean, he'd read almost anything. He just liked to read.
Okay.
And then I started teaching him when he was about 8 years old to play the guitar.
Oh, wow. Okay.
No, he couldn't even hold it then, but he wanted to play, and I was teaching him just simple little things.
Right.
And like bass patterns, because I started out playing ukulele in the mid-60s. And then,
wow.
Yeah,
that's an interesting
that's a whole other
start,
topic.
Right?
Yeah. I was in the fourth grade playing ukulele in Hawaii, but then in 69, I got my first bass guitar. But I was teaching him simple bass patterns because they were easily to do for him. And then eventually some chords, and we would play. And, you know, he played really until his death.
Oh. You guys played duets together, right?
Yeah, we did.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, we played, and we had a lot of fun with that. And, you know, you need to really go through life and not take it too seriously or yourselves too seriously. So we did a lot of laughing at each other.
Right.
And a lot of laughter together in our music. Kelly was a big fan of the acoustic guitar, not so much the electric or the bass. Just loved the acoustic. For him, he would tell me, anybody can play power chords, Dad. You know, on the electric guitar. Just turn it up and play those power distortion chords. But for him to sit down and pick out and play some just beautiful acoustic music was a joy.
You know, and you miss that too. I mean, you miss that sound, that beautiful acoustic sound that just takes a special ability to be able to bring that out of the instrument.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, it really does. I've moved on to distortion and power chords myself.
That's cool.
Well, you know, recently playing, you know, Van Halen Ain't Talking About Love, you know, and it's to
right.
play Eddie's stuff is, you know, feeding itself.
Sure.
And now moving on to Aerosmith, I always had these visions of Kelly playing along with the acoustic somehow with those songs, you know, and just being part of it. It would
sure.
be so good, so great.
Sure. That spirit is still there.
Always.
Yeah. And you've been doing a lot of an incredible amount of activism since this whole incident occurred. But in a recent article on the Orange County Register, I saw that you were taking that into your activism as well, the guitar playing and everything. And they named you. What's
yeah,
the
that
name?
That was the OC Weekly.
Uh-huh.
I was actually on the cover, and it's quite an honor because only the top bands get on the cover of the OC Weekly.
Yeah.
That's kind of like on the cover of the Rolling Stone.
Mm-hmm.
And some guys were very resentful towards him for putting me on there, but they called me the Righteous Rocker.
Yeah, the Righteous Rocker. Rock
and,
on.
And the reason Nate Jackson, he's a wonderful writer and just a wonderful human being, did the story and did it the way he did, because the righteous part of it, when you look up righteous, what does that really mean? You know, somebody that really does good for others.
Right.
And, you know, that's how that name came about. Because I asked, what's the name, Nate? What's the name? What are you going to do? You know, it's just a picture of me on the cover isn't going to do it. And he goes, well, the Righteous Rocker. I'm going, oh, come on, you can't do that. You know, but did, and it all worked out
yeah,
well.
Yeah, it's a great photo. Yeah. Anybody can look at it online. It's a tremendous article, really, that gives you some of the backdrop of what's been going on and what Ron has been doing. Also merging with the arts and the different mediums, which is great. And you have to think how much Kelly would appreciate that. You know, you've taken the music on and using it in such a powerful way.
Yeah, and in fact, as far as the arts and the people involved, the musicians have come out.
Mm-hmm.
And they've been tremendous, all the way from Cherie Curry, Lita Ford, formerly of the Runaways, the Adolescents, you know, Orange County's premier punk band. They've been around over 30 years. they have been tremendous in the fight for justice for Kelly, and wrote songs about him, and so many people have. Matthew Neutron has gone on tour of his own and done amazing things for Kelly too. So these folks have just come together out of nowhere and approached me and wanted to do things. We've had benefit concerts, and the bands get on a list, and they're asking me, Ron, we want to play. We want to play this concert. Obviously, it's all for free. They know it. It all goes to charity, anything that's brought in. So the support has just been tremendous. And the punk rock scene has done such tremendous work in activism for the fight for Kelly and so many others that have been unjustly done wrong and or killed. So,
right. Yeah. It's been happening really since it first began, didn't it? I mean, there's just been this tremendous convergence.
Immediate
of support from so many people around you. I've seen the series of videos too on YouTube, sort of documenting what's been going on with Kelly's army.
Yes.
And that's, you know, there's a whole army. There's a nation of army to support you. In the studio, we also have Lee White, who is a huge supporter for the homeless. She has Kelly's Corner, which she has created, and she's they're out there every week, right?
Well, I
tell us about you.
Well, I didn't name Kelly's Corner, but that's where the exact spot where he is murdered. Mm. And that's a spot, even 4.5 years later, is a living memorial to Kelly, and where people like myself come as often as we can and bring supplies, water, food, clothes, even books for the homeless.
Right. And they appreciate the books.
They do, because many times they have so much time on their hands, they need some kind of stimulation. They get really, really bored.
Right.
And so, and they're surprised by that, and they're like, wow, a book.
And I've been
bringing poetry books, which are quick reads and easy to understand, and it's something maybe new and different for them. And they're like, oh, a poetry book. I'm like, yeah, try it. Poetry's cool.
That's right. And who knows how a particular poem will affect them, or even, I mean, I really believe in poetic activism, too, how it can change a life.
Well, words are the most common currency, so reaching out to them in some kind of one-on-one conversation in a poem is the personal attention that they lack.
Right.
You know, these are invisible people that most everyday people want nothing to do with.
That's right.
So any conversation or engagement that way, even through poetry or words, is wonderful.
I've been thinking about that because I read something like over 40,000 homeless people in the county of Los Angeles alone. And how, depending on the neighborhood you're in, you see them or you don't see them.
Mm-hmm.
And then if there's a lot of homeless people in your area, what do you do? How do you respond to that? You know, some people tune it out because it's almost overwhelming to them. And yet, here they are. And I always feel this sense of, like, I feel so bad, you know, I want to do something. I mean, it's painful a lot of times.
I think a lot of people feel empathy, but they're scared.
Okay.
Because it's something different.
And
to tell you the truth, I was like that before Kelly got killed. And I didn't know Kelly, but after I saw that video of him and then the verdict came out and the cops were freed, it changed my life.
Right.
And I said, you know, I was like, it's time to step up and turn some anger and confusion into something to benefit people and create some more awareness and change some minds. And it's going to take a long time for a lot of people to go, okay, there's a homeless person and they're a real person. They were somebody's daughter or or mother or sister or friend. That mind shift for this country will be revolutionary. I think it's the last stigma that we, you know, the last part of civil rights that needs to be addressed.
And there's a thin line sometimes between homelessness and having a place to live. It's like,
oh yeah,
I mean, live on that edge and are kind of going back and forth
easily. I mean, there are a lot of people, homeless people I know, that have part-time jobs that are just struggling. And even myself, if I lost my job, I could be easily out there. And it would not be easy because I also have a mental illness. I have depression and anxiety, and I take medication to manage it. If I didn't have a job to get that insurance to be able to afford that, it would be really tough times.
Well, you see a lot of homeless out there. Some of them are, you know, struck by economic hardship. Some of them are caught in the drug thing and jailed and released. Some of them have, you know, their own issues, whatever, that they're on the street for mental illness. And it feels for me like there needs to be almost a whole revamp of the mental health program.
Oh, absolutely. These are people that many of them are undiagnosed. And I'd say about 95% of the people I meet out there are mentally ill.
And also this approach that maybe a more holistic approach. When I say holistic, I mean what is going on in that person's life? What is their diet consist of?
Well,
you know, I'm not to like downplay. But I feel like a lot of the times, you know, these guys come out and then they're given a specific label and they're given a drug, and then there's no other accompaniment to that, no other real support. So these guys are having problems in the first place, you know.
Oh yeah, well, mental illness ain't for sissies,
right?
Okay,
yeah.
And as a person who takes medication myself, a lot of times these medications for anxiety or depression have horrible side effects that nobody would wish for. And you just kind of deal with them because that's all Big Pharm is going to give us right now.
Yeah, well, but that's the change I'd love to see.
Yeah, me too. But you have to be a very disciplined and resilient person to own your mental illness. And that's one of the toughest things in life.
Well, thank you for saying that and for being here. And you have a beautiful poem called Ask Me That Question. Would you read that for us?
Yep, absolutely. And this poem is based on my experience being at Kelly's Corner at the Fullerton Transportation Center. You lamppost church, you bus station choir. There is no stained glass, no Sunday best hats or dresses, but there is broken and blood and wind heat swirling. Sitting on the curb, I'm trying to comfort you. Your body is gone, far away from here, maybe in a cardboard box, not even bones. So my head is down, hands on my knees, prayer, in the blinding sunlight of population, witnessed by passing by strangers who ask who you were and if I knew you. And can I say I know you now? And my hazel eyes swell as birds sing in the frightening expanse of this place, of that question, did you know Kelly Thomas?
Thank you.
That's You're welcome.
Very beautiful. Anybody looking at a photograph of him, I feel that I know him somehow, just looking in those eyes. You can see that being. You can see that spirit. And all of us who watched that terribly painful video could connect with that poor, that person that was, you know, reaching out and the and calling for his father and the brutality and the
begging.
Yeah, the begging. I mean, how anybody...
And apologizing, saying, I'm sorry, sir. Please, I can't breathe. And this just went on and on for, it seemed like, forever.
Right.
And no one should ever have to go through that.
Ryan, you have the unusual background of also being... having experience as a sheriff, and you know of the knowledge and the duties and the limits of an officer. Can you speak a little bit to what went wrong?
A lot of what went wrong is the attitude that's allowed by the upper echelon of law enforcement for the officers to have. They have a thing called contempt of cop. it's a bad attitude that there's a good amount of officers that carry it. In other words, you do them wrong, you say something back to them, now you're in contempt of cop and they're going to have their way with you as they hide behind their guns and badges and the support of their fellow officers. That was a big problem. Kelly found himself in contempt of cop when he could not comply with Ramos's antagonizing demands, his harassment, the teasing, the belittling, and the taunting. And then Kelly had enough of him and started, you know, giving it back to him a bit verbally. And that was it. Kelly was in complete contempt of cop. Now Ramos was going to show him who was boss. And that's the big difference that I have between those guys that arrived that night were police officers. There's no doubt. They responded to a legitimate call. They came down there to investigate. I find no problems with that. That's what they should be doing. But when Joseph Wolf struck Kelly, I'll even back up from that. When Ramos said, "See these fists, they're going to F you up." That's wrong. Mm-hmm. No professional officer will ever talk to somebody like that. He already knew Kelly was mentally ill. He knew Kelly. He had several contacts with Kelly prior to that. He knew who and what he was dealing with. When I say what, somebody mentally ill, the whole situation. Ramos already knew that. So when Kelly was on his feet, hands in the air, palms out, surrendering, complete surrendering, Joseph Wolf did what I call assaulting him with a deadly weapon under color of authority. He hit him with that baton just brutally hard, trying to break his leg. And then Ramos did the same thing to him. The attack was on. That's where it went wrong. That's where they went from police officers to murdering thugs, right there. And I was really hopeful that the jury in the criminal trial would see right then that was the point of separation. They arrived as police officers, but then because they could, they changed into murdering thugs. Another big problem is the Peace Officer Bill of Rights, where anybody in law enforcement, no matter what you are, a sheriff, marshal, it doesn't matter, highway patrol, you fall under the Peace Officer Bill of Rights. And what that does is it doesn't allow you and I, Lois, anybody from the public, from knowing anything about their personnel records. Mm-hmm. Not even the district attorney can find out of what these guys have done. Citizen complaints, demotions, internal troubles, disciplinary actions, none of that we're allowed to know. See, we can't even know that they were terminated from the Fullerton Police Department. Of course, we all realize that, but we can't know that. We can never be told that.
Right. These guys are protected.
They're protected under that, so we got to change that. And that was a big problem, too. And that's what officers rely on. That's what the defense relied on in the criminal case. And mm-hmm. they played it out completely, knowing they could hide behind that, and the truth could never be brought forward. Having attended all kinds of top-level meetings with the district attorney and investigators and such, even with the chief of police, I knew the truth, and I had to sit there and be quiet about it. And that was the hardest thing for me to do.
Of course.
The hardest thing for me to do. And then when it came back acquitted, it was just like watching the O.J. Simpson trial all over again. Cincinnati hugging his attorney. Exactly, exactly. Like Cochran and Simpson all over again.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, because hit under the Peace Officer Bill of Rights. So
right.
We need to change that.
And
that's
the L.A. riots, too, when that whole beating came down.
The whole thing.
It was one of the big ones that sort of opened up that whole idea that, you know, people could now video these things on camera, and it was happening, and it's happening all over the place.
I get asked about that, and really, I think it started with Rodney King.
Yeah, Rodney King,
you know,
which was the
riots. He was getting, absolutely, and mm-hmm. he was getting beat down. There's no doubt about that.
Right.
I don't care what the man may have or may have not done. He was being beaten and beaten and clubbed.
That's right.
With deadly weapons, undeservedly. He had his hands and arms up in defensive posture, so he didn't get his face caved in. Who wouldn't do that?
Right.
Oh, stop resisting. How about the fact I'm trying to save my own life here?
I think that it's just like there's this mode that some of them go into. And, you know, you spoke earlier about, well, they did their duty. They arrived on the scene. Mm-hmm. they were, you know, present to deal with the situation. But it also calls, in my mind, to what was the officer's state of mind at that time? Well, you talk about how they're protected and so on.
State of mind was, nobody can touch me. Nobody can tell me what to do.
And Ramos has recently been...
he was arrested for,
Domestic abuse.
Domestic violence, yeah.
Right? Domestic violence. So what does that say about this, the character of this individual? Well, I mean, we're not here to impugn the entire police force.
Not at all.
But there are individuals that do not belong on the force.
That's absolutely correct. And what I always ask of the good professional men and women of law enforcement, and there's many of them, and I'll support them always.
Mm-hmm.
When you do see somebody doing something wrong that is against the law, that is something you shouldn't be doing, it goes against the oath that you took, do something about it.
Right.
But then if they do, they're ousted. When they're in trouble, big trouble, by some, you know, with some real bad people out there, well, their backup's going to be a little longer getting there if they show up at all. And they know that.
Mm-hmm.
They know that because you're the one that reported a fellow officer, a brother officer.
My brother-in-law was given cadaver duty. That was their way of getting back at him.
Right.
Go out in the middle of the night and pick up all the cadavers,
mm-hmm.
you know.
Mm-hmm.
And he did that for a couple of years until finally he got off of that. But.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they have their ways of retribution.
Yeah.
Right.
So nobody says anything then.
Yeah. Well, but there's so many more and more of these cases. They're going to have to change that configuration. Steve. Hello.
Hello.
You've been sitting here so quietly and patiently.
Oh, I've been listening. It's a fascinating conversation. It's one that, I mean, needs to happen not just here, but everywhere.
What is your connection with Lee and with some of the activism that's going on? I mean, I know you have written some poetry, which I would love to hear a poem from you.
Well, I know Lee through the poetry community in Orange County. We've known each other, like, going on 15 years now.
Okay.
And she had mentioned this reading, and, you know, one of the things that she asked us to do was watch the video again, which I had seen, you know, back when it first happened.
Mm-hmm.
But I hadn't sat through the entire thing, and I did this time. And it's, I mean, just a horrible thing to watch, much less go through.
It's so hard. I mean, I usually don't even watch things like that just because I can't confront it.
Mm-hmm.
But I did it because I needed to see what was happening. I'm sorry, go ahead.
Yeah, no, I agree. It's the exact same thing. I felt, you know, if I'm going to come here and speak about this at all, it's something that I need to finish that experience. And it was not an easy one. I mean, I kept wanting to punch my screen, you know.
Yeah.
And just watching it, there's a moment that happens right around the time he starts talking about, you know, my fists are going to fuck you up.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, what could Kelly have done? What could anyone have done in that instance where they don't come out dead?
That's right.
You know,
right.
Once they kind of make that decision, I don't see any coming back from that, you know. And the more people that showed up and started taking part in it, the worse it got.
Mm-hmm.
And I looked at that and I was like, you know, what would I have done in that situation? I would have ended up dead.
Right.
You know, what would anyone have ended up doing? They would have ended up dead on
the Sure,
that,
I mean,
know?
It's survival. It's self-defense. I mean, you're just trying to
Well, and there's nothing that they could have done. There's nothing they could have said that would have gotten them out
right.
of that. I mean, he was saying, I'm sorry, you know, mm-hmm. I give
Multiple
up.
Multiple times.
Right,
You know,
right.
So, I mean, what possibility is there out of there? There's none. You know, they made their decision, and they carried it through.
And that's what scares me, too, is it just seems to be this, I don't know, this sort of pent-up anger and violence in the police community.
Contempt of cop.
Yeah.
You
mm-hmm.
question them. You mm-hmm. challenge their authority. You know, you challenge their authority. And Kelly, these officers said the worst fight they've ever been in their lives. They were just out of breath. They were just totally thrashed to a 135-pound homeless man that didn't throw a single punch or kick.
What does
that say about the Fullerton Police Department and their training?
Mm-hmm.
Now
you can't control a small guy that's not even fighting you?
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You've been doing some work, as I understand it, with the police department.
Yes.
Doing some training yourself on how to deal with people who mm-hmm. have certain limitations.
Mental illnesses, mm-hmm. yeah. Yeah. It's a NAMI, National Alliance for the Mentally Ill, Los Angeles chapter, working with some fantastic folks there. And we're actually training LAPD officers and LA County deputy sheriffs in how to approach, talk to, and deal with, de-escalate things with the mentally ill.
Right.
And it's just been an amazing program. And I thought for sure the guys that were in there were going to just be there for the overtime, not give a damn and all this. And I've been very wrong. These officers are responding.
That's great.
Some have had prior training over the last year or two and continuing. And homeless liaison officers are more and more popular in police departments. You know, they're really boosting it up.
Mm-hmm.
And I truly believe this is all because of Kelly and right. Kelly's army
mm-hmm.
making this all happen.
Huge, huge. I mean, mm-hmm. things, there are changes that are happening.
Yeah.
There's an awareness that's come up,
oh, yeah.
way up. I mean, obviously, as we've all said, there's still a lot of work to do. But just thinking about the fact that why would you antagonize the person, you know, the mentally ill person in the first place? Mm-hmm. You know, it's like there's a way you have to communicate with them order to elicit their cooperation, right?
There's certain people that go into law enforcement, as there are, that go into the military. And I seen it when I was in the Army. As somebody gets promoted to either corporal and then up to sergeant, you know, now they're big and tough and they
right.
have rank and do these kind of
mm-hmm.
things. And big it's eaters. Like, calm down,
mm-hmm.
you know.
Right.
And some folks go into law enforcement for the same reason. They want that gun. They want their
power.
Badge because they've been kicked around in school. You know, they were bullied, and now it's time to give it back.
Oh, my God,
and
yeah.
that's Ramos. You know, mm-hmm. Ramos is a punk and a bully. Now, he was probably bullied the whole time he was in school.
Right.
And, you know, no self-respect or anything. Anybody with self-respect and moral values of any kind doesn't do that.
That's right.
Doesn't do that.
We grew up in the milieu of, you know, to serve and protect.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And, I mean, in my day, cops would walk down the street.
Yeah.
And with club, you know, but they would communicate to people on the street. There was much more. There was
social
less,
engagement.
Yeah, there was less. It was yeah. less confrontational. I mean, they're scared too now. I can imagine because there's a lot of people that will do things that they can't predict
yeah.
their behavior. So they're on alert, but still.
And, and they need to be. There are some for real bad people out there.
Right.
You know?
Right.
And I feel for them in those situations. They need to be careful. They need to be armed to the teeth because the bad guys certainly are.
Right.
So,
this is Lois P. Jones, host of Poets Cafe, and we're in studio with today's guests, Ron Thomas, Lee White, and Steve Ramirez on Pacifica Radio, KPFK in Los Angeles. We'll be right back after this break.
Kelly Thomas, many died there. They were police brutality.
The track you just heard is Kelly Thomas by Capitol Kill. If you're just tuning in, this is a special Poets Cafe tribute to Kelly Thomas with our guests Ron Thomas, Lee White, and Stephen Ramirez. So Steve, we were talking about your poems. You brought a couple of beautiful poems today to share. And this one you've recently just nailed down, right?
Yeah, last night I found when Lee had mentioned during the show, I knew that I wanted to write something for it.
Yeah.
And it's something that I've had on my mind for a little while. I just hadn't found a doorway into the poem yet. Because I don't have any direct relationship with Kelly aside from the video and all the reading I've done on the case. And so I kept, you know, I kept thinking, you know, how do I speak about this authentically? Right. You mean, how do I approach this? I'm a huge fan of Fringe. Me and my girlfriend recently, like, binge-watched all 5 seasons of it. And the idea of these parallel worlds kind of gave me that spark of, okay, so... Especially because Lee had mentioned that she wanted something a little bit hopeful. She didn't just want all this, you know, screw
well,
the police stuff.
Well, I didn't want all F the police. And,
right. Yeah. You
know. All our retribution poems.
Mm-hmm. And you know, that's mostly what I've written as far as activism goes. I mean, it just makes you angry, right?
Yes, of course.
And so I wanted to find a hopeful way of looking at this. Yeah. And so I took that idea and said, you know, what if there is another world where, you know, he's still alive and where, you know, all these horrible things that we do to each other aren't going on? And so I kind of created this kind of little utopian idea in my head. And the idea of binge-watching Fringe is kind of like my doorway into this poem.
Okay.
And the only way I could kind of speak to what was on my mind at the time.
Great.
All right. So the title is... This is what I taught myself to hope for after binge-watching all 5 seasons of Fringe. There must be a world where you're still alive. A place where strangers didn't beat their insecurities against the eggshell of your skull. Where the voices in your head are a gospel choir and they give free lessons. A strange new world where being a victim isn't a crime. Where your home will always be exactly large enough to house the people crammed into the elevator of your heart. A nation where nobody goes to bed until everybody finds a place to sleep. Where wars are reserved for the playground and everyone comes back to life after the battle is won. A land where it's okay to say, "You frighten me," even when you're talking to a reflection in a puddle. An echo of somebody you might have become in another place where the world wasn't so kind.
Thank you. That was very beautiful. It brings to mind the idea of how, of many things, but in particular, how homelessness is criminalized and the funds that go into supporting that, right? A lot of police funds go into paying for extra policemen to go out there and do what they... One of the things I know is they tell them, you know, we're going to confiscate some of the stuff that you have in your shelter. These guys get ticketed for whatever they can trump up.
Well, it's called camping in public.
Okay.
Yeah, illegal camping. And that was beautiful, by the way, Steve. Thank you.
Yeah.
Not that yours wasn't, Lee.
I got you, Ron.
Yeah, but, you know, illegal camping. So, you know, just by virtue that we're all human, we sleep. If you happen to have your backpack or whatever with you on a bench, on the curb, wherever, you're leaning against the wall, and you happen to fall asleep, because you have your belongings with you, you're now illegally camping.
And that's what they can...
And you'll get a citation for it, knowing that this person can't possibly know where to go to take care of the citation, doesn't have the funds to do it or whatever. And now the person has multiple and can be arrested for not paying them.
No. And that's their way of getting them up off the street.
Is put them in jail.
Mm-hmm.
Because
which
they
we already have.
As human beings.
Yeah, that's which is ridiculous. You know, it's this total punitive... mentality we have.
And, you know, I throw that back at the city during city council meetings and things like that. I really throw it in their face because while these citations are being issued for illegal camping by patrol officers, the woman's still getting raped, the bank's still being robbed, the burglar's still taking things out of homes, all these things are, the child is being abducted, all these things are happening while the officer's writing an illegal camping ticket to somebody on the street trying to sleep.
Thank you. Thank you for saying that.
Right. Right.
I just so agree, you know, because there are major real crimes going on out there, but yet there are millions of dollars that are literally going into funding the police force for ticketing these guys. That's not the way to get them off
the
street.
And what does it cost in the court system, in the jail system, to do all of this, and then the person gets out of jail, doesn't have any property again.
Right.
And so what does a person do? Some perhaps, not definitely not all, and I'm not labeling here, But when you have absolutely nothing,
yeah.
you know, would I steal a loaf of bread from a store? Of course I would.
I've been doing it for centuries.
If I had to feed my children or eat, right. would I do something? You know, I'm sure I would, though I'm not a thief. So don't expect a person that you've just taken everything from, transported, locked up, and kick them out on the streets in the middle of the night with absolutely nothing and expect them not to want a piece of bread.
That's right.
Mm-hmm. And now you've arrested them for stealing. Well, who set that up? You took their belongings away. They were just fine going to, what I'll just say, a soup kitchen, you know,
right,
where they can get free food from a church or whoever. You took them away from that, and now you arrest them again for trying to eat when you took their ability to eat away.
Well, this is, it's idiocy. And I know there's a whole new funding that's occurring now to deal with the homeless situation.
Mm-hmm.
This is part of the good news.
Well, the governor signed a new bill.
And probably even also connected with your son's death. Mm-hmm. I think a lot of this has just steamrolled some of these things into action.
I've, along with a lot of people, a couple thousand, went up to Sacramento on the steps of our Capitol. And I spoke before a lot of people. We marched all through the streets of Sacramento there by the Capitol,
mm-hmm.
bringing more awareness to this. And got senators involved, got the assembly people involved with all of this, making it happen. And as soon as you go away, so do they.
Right.
So that's why I'm on their backside continuously. And so many others are too. It's not just me. Many, many people are activists at any level. I mean, you folks here today too. And that's what it takes, is we the people are the only people that can make this change and make it happen for the better.
That's right. There's a vigilance that has to occur.
It has to
in
occur.
Order for the change to happen.
Yeah.
And thank you so much for being such a vigilant force in this important subject and the laws that need to be changed for everyone's sake. Lee, I think it was you that posted something about, was it in Finland, a country that has been able to get all their people off of the street?
It's Canada.
It's Canada, okay.
It's those nice folks in Canada. But also in the United States, certain cities are really embracing, you know, inclusion and including homeless people in real solutions. And I think in Utah, they created some permanent housing for them. And I heard it recently at a meeting in Fullerton that 80% of those people that had the housing there went on to get jobs and turn their lives around and be able to pay for their own housing.
Mm-hmm.
So, frankly, if you just look at the numbers economically, it's just cheaper to have the services and the shelters and rehab and job training to help these people turn their lives around versus the cyclical nature, the carousel of camping and public tickets, bench warrants,
right.
Et cetera, that happens to numerous homeless people.
I think they're just starting to realize that.
We're on the cusp of it.
Yeah.
And my hope, and I don't know if it's ever going to be there in my lifetime, but that we finally embrace everyone in this country. And I love the enthusiasm that gay rights has had in this country, mm-hmm. and that's now becoming, you know, a non-issue now because
mm-hmm.
people are like, oh, everybody deserves to get married.
Mm-hmm.
Everybody deserves their spousals, you know, like insurance and things like that. So I'm really hoping that there's got to find that compassionate heart that
right.
is America.
Mm-hmm.
You know.
And that the homeless deserve to be helped.
Everyone deserves a place to sleep.
Mm-hmm.
Everyone deserves to be, you know, looked at in the eye and given a smile and some hope.
And for those people that, you know, that want the housing, that want to change their lives, I mean,
some
we know housing.
Don't.
Some people don't. We
some
know.
Homeless people do not, and
that's, right.
That's their choice. But that's also
there
why
was one guy in that Canadian article who. Had like they had to bring him back 75 times or something, and he finally
sometimes
stayed at home.
It's the 76th time,
right?
But you know,
yeah.
that's like that with people.
Mm-hmm.
People
yeah.
are stubborn.
That's right.
Everybody's stubborn. Homeless
that's
people,
right.
non homeless people. So sometimes you just have to have that continuity, and that can be pretty magical if you know you keep trying.
Thank you for your work that you're doing, and would you read another poem for us?
Sure. This is based on, you know, a lot of times when I go to Kelly's Corner, I'll stay there late into the night. Mm-hmm. And it's very surreal at the transportation center. And there's a lot of bars there also, and people coming out. And it's, this one's called The Flower Bed, and it's about that. And even the drunk white girls left. All that remained were lamppost tops with giant white eggs, calm stretches of darkness, each bench with a sleeping homeless person curled up on it, bodies so still, Pompeii cousins, a United States fact. You couldn't see their faces, but you could see more homeless silhouettes trying to sleep propped against brick walls and some parallel with buildings, skin to brick, hugging the walls. This is what it's like to be invisible. And they were motionless and quiet and outside in this desert part of night. And I'm watching this giant art installation of life at the Fullerton Transportation Center where Kelly Thomas was murdered. And the last bus comes and goes, and the police cars drive the perimeter trying to lasso a calf. And the trains clang and charge through the midnight of all of this like rhinos with knives. As I stand with car keys in hand on aching feet, my eyes letting go of the tears, giving them respectfully to the asphalt, the unknowing, because I have a place to go home to, a bed to reveal my face. An orange rose for my pillow.
Thank you. Amazing.
Yep. The orange rose is my visualization of Kelly. There was a picture of him taken when he was homeless in downtown Fullerton, and he was noticing a flower. Mm-hmm. And I did a painting of him as that flower because I see him as the beautiful person he was.
Yes.
Underneath all of that, and that's so important for all of us to try to look beyond what we see on the surface level and to understand the...
Well said.
Oh, thank you.
That's right. There is a film that's been pulled together called Murder in Fullerton.
Yes.
Tell me about that.
Murder in Fullerton, it's about exactly what the title suggests. It covers what happened to Kelly, excerpts from the video, but it also covers other cases of very flagrant, willful murder by cop. And in no way is it a film to bash the police, but it brings out the truth and reality. I'd love to do a film one day of the good things police officers do, because there's an awful lot that they do. You bet. But Murder in Fullerton covers really how society let Kelly and all the Kelly Thomases down and allowed this to happen, all the way from the city itself, which could be any city, USA, mm-hmm. by not knowing what their police department does, the policies and procedures that have all been changed. The citizens get together, rallying, have had enough, and we touched on it a little bit earlier about now everybody is videoing the police.
Yes.
Everybody's
that's
videoing
right.
the police, and it's, that's an
they
amazing thing.
They have to be accountable.
They have to be held accountable. Mm-hmm. No good police officer, no matter what entity they come from, should ever be afraid to be filmed.
Right.
Ever. I know the agencies have fought against the body cams because they don't want people to see what's going on. And, you know, the LAPD, a couple years ago, the officers found a way to disable the dash cams. Mm. And, you know, it's like, well, I don't know what's wrong with it. I'm not the technician.
Right.
But they disable them mm-hmm. because they don't want them to see what's going on. And so now it'll be interesting to see the accountability of those officers when their body cams malfunction, perhaps.
Mm-hmm.
What's going to be done? One of the policies that got changed in Fullerton was, and I'm getting away from the movie, but it's very relevant. It's the officers quite often do not turn on their DARs, the digital audio recorders, little tape recorders,
okay.
right? And they're supposed to. But now there's a policy that if you don't turn it on like you're supposed to, now you're in trouble. Well, it took Kelly's brutal death to get this to go through. And see, the movie covers all of those kind of things, the accountabilities of what should have happened, what we should all be able to expect from our law enforcement and our city governments that let us all down, and certainly let Kelly down.
This is very important. And how can our listeners, is it something that's on DVD? Will it be played again?
It's to be released over the internet, a way to do that.
Okay,
DVD,
great.
So, yeah.
That's great. Something we all need to be aware of. It's been an incredible honor to have you here, Ron.
Stop it.
We're all feeling very emotional right now because Ron is going to read us something that he's written for his son, Kelly. It's a poem. And Ron doesn't usually write poems.
I've never wrote a poem before.
So thank you for doing this and being so brave.
Let's see how I can get through this or not. Recently a friend of mine, she writes poetry, told me that poems shouldn't rhyme. But this one does.
Go for it.
All right, Ron.
I don't know if I can get through this. To my son, a second trial has just begun. It's been over 4 years since I've lost you, my son. On that hot July night with such fright in your eyes, those six murdering thugs beat you until you are no longer alive. As citizens watch with the horror unfold, all of them learning something that none of us were told. The fact that those who took an oath to protect and serve could kill a man so brutally without any reserve. I often look back on all those years. We did so many things together, and soon come my tears. So many times we played our guitars, both of us knowing we wouldn't go far. And when we laughed so hard it hurt inside, realizing that neither one of us could sing, not knowing what July 5th, 2011 would bring. I spend every day seeking justice for you, my red-headed son with eyes of blue. I give you this promise as your dad that is true. I will not rest a day until justice comes through. You cried out my name 31 times, and then within moments you are no longer alive. I will forever miss you, my heart always sad. Those 31 times you cried out, crying out for me, your dad.
Thank you. That was so perfect and beautiful and moving. And I know he hears that poem.
And it rhymes.
Yes, it rhymes.
You rock. You did it. A huge, huge thanks to tonight's special guests, Ron Thomas, Lee White, Stephen Ramirez, and Kelly Thomas in spirit, and always our inimitable producer, Marlena Bond. Look for us on the Poets Cafe fan page on Facebook. You've been listening to Poets Cafe on Pacifica Radio, your progressive choice since 1949. We're ending the show with Don't Look Now by Creedence Clearwater Revival, the last song Ron and Kelly played together.
Who'll take the gold from the mine? Who'll take the soul from the air? Who'll take the leaf and grow it to a tree? Oh, look now, it ain't you or me. Who'll work the field with his hands? Put it back to the plow. Who'll take a mountain and give it to the sea? Don't look now, it ain't you or me. Don't look now, someone's done your starving. Don't look now, someone's done your praying too. Who'll make the shoes for your feet? Who'll make the clothes that you wear?
It ain't